This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. On November 6th, voters who live in the city of Cincinnati will have the opportunity to cast their vote for or against six different proposals to change the way city council is selected and conducts business. Some are more important than others. Two are confusing if you do not understand the background and the way the winner will be declared if both pass. To discuss the substance of these charter amendments, we are joined this afternoon by WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson and WVXU City Hall reporter Jay Hanselman. Howard, Jay, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon. I'm confused. Cincinnati would do something that would confuse voters? I can't imagine.
Let's try to pretend we know what's going on here. Okay. Jay, let's start with 10 and 11, Jay and Howard. But Jay, let's talk about 10 first. There are calls. Issue 10 would basically return us to a system that, if you've been in Cincinnati for any length of time, you know existed from 1925 to 2013. And it meant that council stood for election every 2 years. What's the argument for supporting going back to that system?
I think the biggest argument that I've heard that it returned, that with the four-year terms, that it's been harder to find council members out in the community interacting with their constituents, especially the community councils. So they think that if they go back to two-year terms, that there will be more interaction because they can't rest like maybe years one, two, and part of three before it's time to be back on the ballot. They would be running every 2 years.
But Howard, wasn't the argument that they – it wasn't so much that they were resting, but that they needed time to do the real work and not just campaign?
Well, that's true, and everything Jay says is correct. But also, they had they were in a situation under two-year terms where they were constantly campaigning for the next election, where they were out raising money and they were doing things that – we're taking away from, in some cases, taking away from the business of council and putting it on to the political side of things. Now, one thing that might be good about it is that, you know, every time we have a council election, there are people who win and there are people who lose. Some of the people who lose would make perfectly good council members. They're smart. They're intelligent. But they just aren't very well known, and they don't have very much money. And now they have to wait for 4 years.
And 4 years is a long time.
A long time in politics. You can be forgotten very quickly. And this would give them another opportunity to try again if they were so inclined.
Okay. So that's issue 10, which would be return to election of council every 2 years for everybody.
Right.
Issue 11 is a variant. We would have council races every 2 years, but part of council, five seats would be up one cycle, four seats would be up the next cycle. And the trick on this, if people begin to read into it, is that we have to get that started, and the people who would be the top five finishers in 2021 in the next council race, they would get to hold their seats for 4 years. The people in 6 to 9 would have to run again in 2 years. But that's just a way to get the things running. So you would have four-year terms, but we'd have council races every 2 years. Jay, what about that? What's the argument for that?
That, again, some council member, every 2 years you have a chance to change the makeup of council. So as you say, in 2021, you'd be filling nine seats in 2021, but the top five would serve until 2025, six through nine serve until 2023, at which time they would run again and then serve until 2027. So you get the staggered. So five and four every
Once you get that going, then you're in for 4 years at a time.
Right, right. Yeah. Now, the objection that I've heard is that this would give the, at least from some Republican folks, is they're concerned about this because they see that as a way to turn city council completely over to Democrats because the Democrats could focus 5 1 year for the next year and could lock out Republicans from serving on council.
Which is true, but, I mean, they only ran three candidates, the Republicans, in the last election. I look at it and say the same argument that I talked about with two-year terms applies here. It gives those candidates who lost an opportunity every 2 years to try again. Now, there wouldn't be as many council seats available, but they would at least not have to wait and wait for 4 years in order to do it again if they're really serious about getting elected to council and were ambitious enough.
I thought it was interesting this week, too, that Jason Williams from the Cincinnati Enquirer wrote an article about that there's actually a very public campaign now for issue 10 to go back to the two-year terms that has the support of former council member Jeff Birding and former mayors Charlie Lucan and Mark Mallory, who think that council was more responsive, got more done when they were on the two-year terms as opposed to the four-year terms.
Got more done. That's the interesting thing, because the argument for the four-year terms was we'll be able to get more done by not having to campaign all the time. So
it's a subjective judgment. I guess you can make an argument either way on that, looking at the record. I would say that it was certainly better than the old top vote-getter thing for mayor where they were all competing.
And that's not on the ballot.
That's not on the ballot. That's gone forever.
But here's a little bit of an interesting thing about 10 and 11. What happens if they both fail? If people say, go into that booth and say, I don't understand what this is, and that's when the people vote against it.
We keep the system we have.
What if they both pass?
The one with the highest number of yes votes would be adopted.
Yes.
So, for example, and I don't know how many people are going to vote, if issue 10 got 20,000 yes votes and issue 11 got 25,000 yes votes, issue 11 would be adopted.
Yes. That's Ohio election law, really.
So if you have competing
ballot issues.
Okay. So that's something to watch on election night. It's not just a question of win or lose. It's which one.
Which has the wider margin.
Has the wider margin.
That's entirely possible, too. I mean, people, will take a look. They may or may not read the ballot language very carefully.
And I think that's something, we've got more charter amendments to talk about, but Howard brings up a good point. And as a matter of fact, I looked up your sample ballot because I don't live in Hamilton County. Howard does. Mm-hmm. And it's three pages.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how much ballot fatigue will wear in till you get – you're voting for all these candidates. The issues will be at the end of the ballot.
But let's remember on the issues – well, and also on candidates, unless you live in the city of Cincinnati, you will not see the issues we're talking about here.
Right. Yeah. These are strictly
your ballot
Cincinnati
will
issues.
Only –
I do, and so I will see them.
That's right. And it isn't – I looked at that ballot, too, for the city of Cincinnati – and it's only three pages. It is not as overwhelming as if you look at everything that's possible in Hamilton County, then it looks overwhelming.
Well, Dan, it could be worse. I mean, it could be in a odd-numbered year where you have all of the other races like the municipal courts and all that that kind of stuff on the ballot.
We do have a lot of judges running, though.
We do have a lot of judges, but it's a pretty clean ballot. But you have to be a dedicated voter to go through the whole thing.
Well, let's keep moving here. We've got more.
Okay.
Yeah. Just one other thing, too, we talk about, and Howard can correct me if I'm wrong. Six is probably the most that I ever recall being on the ballot at one time for charter amendments in the city.
Yeah.
And what's even more amazing about that is they were all six put on by council.
Yes.
Normally, you have some that are council and some that are put on through the signature gathering process. Right. These all came through council. And the amazing thing about that is you had to have six council members agree on something, which that's sometimes difficult because it takes a two-thirds majority to get these on the ballot. So you had to have six members say yes to put all six of these on.
And, Frick, we're going to get to some that –
that
the mayor didn't like to begin with, but they had six yeah. council members supporting them. Let's take a look at issue number 12, which reads, the charter of the city of Cincinnati would be repealed and replaced to require all meetings of council and its committees to be held in accordance of the Ohio Open Meetings Law. Gee, it just sounds like we're going to follow the law. There is a bite to this, right, Howard?
Yeah, there is. I mean, it's since 2000, there was a court case which said that the closed door meetings were illegal and
going to executive session.
Going into executive session, and I prefer to call them closed door sessions because that's what they are. But, you know,
the mayor calls them secret closed door meetings.
Yeah, right. But, you know, that's not, it was a court ruling and it's been in effect for some time, but it is not in compliance with Ohio revised code, which has some exceptions under which public bodies, whether it's a legislature or any other public body, can meet privately, you know, real estate transactions, talking with lawyers, personnel issues.
So if there's a lawsuit or a personnel issue.
Right.
Sale of property.
Sale of property.
And in fact, this got really put out front when we had 6 months ago the struggle between the mayor and the city manager all taking place in public. No opportunity,
right.
No right yeah. to go behind into a closed meeting
right.
or an executive session.
Had that been the Hamilton County administrator, it would have been discussed in executive session. If it had been the city of Columbus and a problem with their city manager, it would have been discussed in
yes.
executive session.
Well, Howard, you've been around a long time, and Jay, you haven't been around quite as long as Howard.
Not yet.
I mean, I know I can remember when there were executive sessions.
Well,
at
sure.
council.
Oh, absolutely.
So
yeah.
you've covered Howard Council with both systems.
Yes.
What do you think about that? I mean,
well, I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, I obviously, as a journalist, you know, we want openness. We want to be able to see the sausage being made. And but I can also understand from public officials' standpoint, from elected officials' standpoint, if they want to go sit down and talk with their lawyers, if they're being sued and they want to talk with their lawyers about that, then there is such a thing as attorney-client privilege, and it applies to them as well. Or on a few other things like real estate. And, you know, those are more sensitive issues that don't necessarily have to be discussed in public. Although, people like Jay and I would love the idea of hearing these arguments go on in public.
And I can speak from a little bit of experience. Many, many, many years ago, I was on a village council and we had executive sessions.
Yeah.
And it was my experience that as much as you think it's a closed session, generally, if we met on Thursday, what we talked about was available for public consumption on Friday, Saturday, or the next week. Because people,
well,
when you have 10, in this case, you would have 10 members, you'd have the mayor, nine council members, and then they can invite, if they want, city officials, city lawyers, even the city manager, assistant city managers into these executive sessions. There's a good chance somebody's going to talk.
There's always chatterboxes around. I mean, there's always people who are going
to I do want to make an argument, though. And, of course, I've worked in the media and the press for a long time, but I don't know any other organization that handles its personnel issues out front, handles mm-hmm. and budget issues with budget. This doesn't involve – budget's going to be done in public.
Right? Oh, yes.
But
absolutely.
Legal issues. I mean, public – where in an age where public entities, parts of government have lost the confidence of people, I think part of that comes from seeing the fighting out front. Seeing the mayor and the city manager just escalating the charges against each other, it becomes embarrassing.
I think that's probably true, and I think the recent episode with Harry Black, the city manager, was a good example of that. People watched that out in public, very public, and were turned off by it.
But I would also take it the other way, that if they can't meet in executive session, those conversations are still happening. Take the Gang of Five text messages that the Gang of Five that were involved were being sued over. But those conversations will happen. It's just, you know, is it in a controlled environment where we actually know they're meeting behind closed doors? And let's not forget, they can't vote behind closed doors. So if something's going to happen, the vote has to be public. So we'll know the discussions may happen behind closed doors, but we're going to know how if they were going to fire the city manager, they have to come back out into open session, take a vote, and we'll know who was for it and who was against it.
Which allows you to then begin to ask questions of people on both sides.
Right. Why were you a yes? Why were you a no?
Okay.
There's always ways of getting around it. I mean, over the years, I've seen things like, you know, if you had a 5-member majority of a city council, 2 of them would meet in a booth in a restaurant. They would talk things out, and then they would go, you know, one of them would go and sit with another 2. They'd figure it out, and, you know, they'd work around.
Right. Although they kind of got in trouble for that, too, because that's what's called a round robin.
Yes, a round robin.
And they did get dinged on that by a court, too, you're not allowed to
used to happen routinely.
It still happens. And I mean, anyone who thinks that it doesn't happen is silly.
Yeah, it's very naive, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so that's 12. 12 is the question, really, of open meetings and whether or not certain types of things, legal disputes, property acquisitions or sales, and personnel questions.
And they have to be very specific. There are 7 instances, I think, in the revised code. And when you go into the executive session, there would have to be a motion, I move to go into executive session pursuant to a higher revised code, and you have to actually state the section
which one you're discussing.
Right. And then you go from there.
Okay. Let's go on. Issue number 13 on the ballot is a reform campaign proposal that regulates city races. And it reads, it would prohibit unlimited and anonymous contributions made through limited liability companies, LLCs, to a candidate for municipal election. What sparked this proposal?
The last
mayor's. And let's remind everybody that these came from council.
Yeah, this was basically a direct result of the last mayor's race. As it stands right now, I as an individual can give $1,100 to a candidate or multiple candidates, but no more than $1,100 each. But if I had set up a number of LLCs, I could donate $1,100 from each one of my LLCs. So if I had JLLC, JHLLC, Hanselman Enterprises, each one of those, no matter how many I had, I could give up to $1,100. What this would do is more mirror state law where my LLC is tied to an individual. So if I have 10 LLCs, I'm still capped at $1,100 for me individually. I can't give for each one of my LLCs. Now, I could give if I have 10, or 11 would make my math easier. If I had 11 of them, I'd give $100 each from my LLC.
But it
still only adds up to $1,100.
Yeah, and it wouldn't necessarily all be your money. I mean, other people could contribute
to it. Right, and if you have multiple people in the LLC, you actually have to break it down. If you had 3, so if it was the 3 of us and we were giving $1,100, we would have to assign a certain amount to Howard, a certain amount to Dan, a certain amount to me. Or we could assign it all to me, but it's still tied to me as an individual.
And it's not reported that way, you know, that way.
Currently,
yeah. So you don't know. I mean, the key phrase, this is what you use in the beginning, unlimited and anonymous. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, goes against the spirit of campaign finance laws.
I would like to suggest, though, that campaign finance laws on the federal level have gone exactly that direction. You know,
oh, yes.
They have become the ability to hide where the money is coming from has gotten easier and easier. And in one sense, I think what that this is trying to do is stop that from developing on the local level.
Exactly.
Is that fair?
That's exactly right.
So this is, and this was really generated from the mayor's race last time. How about from council races? Is this?
There were some donations, I know, to, and I'm not going to name the council member, but that person indicated that it would probably cost them about $20,000. But I think you were up in, for the mayor's candidates, probably in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, yes.
That came from LLCs.
Yes.
So this would really change the huge amount, possibly change, or at least slow down the huge amounts of money that are pouring into the mayor's race.
Yes, until the candidates figure out another way to dodge the
I was going to say, there's always loopholes in
system.
It. When the money's out there and it needs, it wants to get in, it seems there's always a hole or a leak someplace right. Where it will get in.
You guys are cynics. You've just been around too long.
I am not a cynic.
You've just seen too many things.
Dan, I am a skeptic, not a cynic.
You're a skeptic, not a cynic. Okay. All right. So that was issue 13. Issue 14 and issue 15 are both about the civil service. And the first one, issue 14, says that civil service will be changed to, quote, delete the provision that only Ohio residents may receive the 5-point preference given to qualified veterans who achieve a passing score on the city entry-level civil service exam. So you'd have to be an Ohio resident to get that extra 5-point bump, assuming you already passed the exam. This wouldn't get you past the minimum standard, but
well, actually, it depends. No,
no.
So right now, if I'm an Ohio resident and a veteran, and I take the civil service, I get an immediate 5-point bump. What this does is delete the Ohio resident requirement, so that if I am a veteran in North Carolina who wants to apply to be a Cincinnati police officer, I get the 5 bumps. So basically it removes the Ohio resident only. So basically any veteran from anywhere in the United States, if they apply for a position that's civil service, they would get a 5-point bump.
What's driving this?
I think it's to make sure that they're not limiting the pool of applicants for some
reason.
And
it's partly because we're a tri-state community and sure. There could be a lot of people over
people in Kentucky
Indiana. And Indiana.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, the only argument against it is that, you know, this is Ohio and this is a program that should be for people who live in Ohio.
And it could be, too. You could grow up in Cincinnati, be in the military and live in North Carolina and want to come back home, but you're classed as a North Carolina resident. Even though you grew up in Cincinnati, you don't, as it stands now, you wouldn't get the 5 points. As a veteran now, that would delete the Ohio residency requirement.
Any argument against this? That,
people should, if they want to be, they should make Ohio their home anyway.
Yeah, right.
Okay. All right. Final issue that's on the ballot is issue 15, and that would award 5 points to graduates of a public safety academy that might be established by the Cincinnati Public Schools with the advice and cooperation of the city of Cincinnati. Sort of same arguments for this. People who go through a public safety academy would get 5 points to get the qualified people. Does this academy exist?
From what I understand, not yet. It's a theoretical concept that the Cincinnati Public Schools could set up these training academies for police officers and firefighters, and they would get, like you say, if they graduate from it, they would get the 5 points. But my understanding right now, these don't exist yet.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Can an 18-year-old become a firefighter or a police officer?
I'm not sure about firefighter. I thought you had to be 21 to join the police department.
I believe that's true, yeah.
So you would have to have a 3-year gap before you could actually use that.
Unless they figure out a way that, you know, they go through the academy and while they're waiting to join the police department, they end up in some sort of civilian position until they can start the academy.
They create positions, for...
Okay. Well, 6 proposals.
And I think the other thing, and I said this from the beginning when they put the 6 on, if you don't understand them, it's a whole lot easier. Jimbo Prey taught me this years ago that if you don't understand something, it's a whole lot easier to say no than it is to say yes. And I wonder if there will be some folks who will see all these and just, I don't get it, no on all of them.
Well, we know that that happens. That's I don't know if that's a tendency. Good recommendation, but that it's better to go in and take a look at what's really in all of these.
And I'll tell you the truth. I mean, if you look at it and you go in there and you take the time to read it, it's not that complicated.
No. And you can read the League of Women Voters guide, and you can there's backup information here. And obviously, this discussion summarized all of that. So, Howard and Jay, thank you for being with us and getting us ready to vote. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. Segment producer is Layla Shakui. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley. Will it save millions on prison spending and get more users into drug treatment? Or will it protect drug traffickers from prosecution? The pros and cons of Ohio Issue 1 on the next Cincinnati Edition, plus building a more diverse workforce by design, and more than 150 authors and thousands of books. We preview Books by the Banks. That's Wednesday on Cincinnati Edition at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.